Welcome into the latest episode of the Five Reasons Podcast. I'm Ethan Skolnick here, as always, with Chris Whittingham. Now that you found us, make sure that you hit the follow or subscribe button on your favorite podcast provider. That now includes Spotify and TuneIn, in addition to all of the other providers that we are on: Podbean, CastBox, Pocket Cast, Google Play, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and all of the other ones. Also, check out the other 14 podcasts in our network, in particular because we're doing a Dolphins episode. Make sure that you check out The Fish Tank. They've had the Marx Brothers the last 2 weeks. They have Tony Nathan this upcoming week with the Great Hook and Ladder. Or is it called The Hook and Lateral? I never knew which it was. But that, prior to the Miami Miracle or Shock at the Rock, was one of the most famous plays in Miami Dolphins history. They've got Tony Nathan this week. And also listen to 3 Yards Per Carry so you can hear Simon Clancy subtweet me the entire episode. And we are going to address some of that today. I come to you after we had another watch party today. We had this one at Gecko Parks. Some kids were playing. We were watching. And we dropped to 0-7 now in watch parties. The Dolphins losing today 41-17 to Minnesota, getting absolutely hammered in the second half. And look, I don't think we're to blame for this, because I think the Dolphins are perfectly capable of losing road games under Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill without us. I'm sure it probably didn't help that we had a watch party for this, but everybody had fun with the pizza and the beer and the games and all that good stuff, except for the actual game that we were watching. And Chris, I think we're just going to focus a lot today on the road and what's happened here. Because look, I've been arguing with Simon all day, and you can follow him at SI Clancy. And, you know, Simon and I have been going back and forth because he thinks I'm too anti-Gase, and he's citing the 75 injuries that they have right now and that they're 7-7 in spite of that. And I understand if you're going to look at it from that perspective and say they've got a ton of injuries, which they do, they have a lot of them. I think some of them are a little overstated. I think there are some that matter, like Albert Wilson and Josh Sitton and William Hayes. There are others that, like, are Daniel Kilgore, that people are just throwing in because the Dolphins are incapable of finding a decent backup center. I don't think it was because their starting center was that great. But look, the Dolphins had to start the game. Their starting quarterback, their top three receivers from when they entered the season, or the three guys we thought would be their top three. They had their top three draft picks playing. They had their top two backs playing until Frank Gore got hurt early in the game. And the guy who replaced him, Kalen Ballage, ripped off a 75-yard run. And defensively, they had three of their top four defensive backs. I understand Xavien Howard was not there. They had their top four defensive ends from the start of the season. They had their top three linebackers from the start of the season. So, you know, they had their kicker, they had their punter. You know, do they have a lot of injuries? Yes. Do they have a lot of functional players still playing? Yes. Are they absolutely horrible in two areas? One, offense. They're 29th in the league. They are in danger of dropping to 31st in the league, Chris. They are less than 10 yards per game ahead of the Jets and the Bills, so they could drop to 31st. Before the end of the season very easily, particularly because they still play the Bills. They got to go up to Buffalo to do it.
And Eagle today noted on the broadcast that the Dolphins are, on average, outgained by 90 yards per game.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, they've outgained, I believe they've outgained only one team this season in regulation. The second took overtime. That was the Bears game. I think they've only outgained one team in regulation. And the second place that they're just horrible is the road in general. And this is an Adam Gase thing. This is a Ryan Tannehill thing, because it does predate Gase. I mean, you know, everybody remembers when they needed to win a game in Buffalo 5 years ago at the end of the season. And with Ryan Tannehill, they put up 103 total yards. So this does predate Gase. But I mean, here's what they are so far this season on the road. They're 1-6, this team. They've been bad all three seasons. They've been outscored 218-120 this year. And I polled this, Chris. I said, who's most at fault for this? And as we speak, 43% the coaches, 21% the executives, 20% the defense, and 16% the quarterbacks. So people aren't even really putting this on Tannehill. They're just a horrible, horrible road team. And now you look at all of their numbers for the course of the season, and yes, they're 7-7. They're also a +9 in turnover ratio. Teams that are a +9, that's usually worth about 2-3 wins over the course of the season.
Which is why they're 7-7.
Right. And
otherwise they'd be 5-8, 4-9.
Right. And right. That's what, yeah, exactly.
They're 5-9, 4-10. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I got it wrong in my tweet. And Simon came after me on that because he's like, no, they're 7-7. You play four quarters. And I understand if we're talking about, if we're talking about cause and you're going to talk about injuries, I get that. If you're going to say, okay, overall, you've overachieved based on that, you can say, okay. But again, turnovers to me are in large part luck. When you look at the 2008 season that the Dolphins had, they were plus 17 in turnover ratio. They went 11-5. Some of that was Chad Pennington protected the ball. Some of that was just good fortune. Okay. Mm-hmm. The next season, Pennington only started three games, but he wasn't good. He hurt his shoulder again. He wasn't good. Henny started most of the season. They were a minus 9. They slipped from 11-5 with virtually the same team, with the exception of that position. They slipped from 11-5.
That's a big deal, though. Going from Chad Pennington to Chad Henne is a massive difference. And that particular area, I'm not saying on general performance, but Chad Pennington was very careful with the football.
He was, but they slipped from 11-5 to 7-9. Mm-hmm. Their turnover ratio flipped from plus 17 to minus 9. They lost four games in the standings. Mm-hmm. And all I'm saying is that this team, the only reason that they've been afloat the way they have is because of turnovers, which I have always felt is about 60% luck and 40% skill. A lot of it is just being in the right place at the right time. Some of it is forcing a quarterback into an interception, maybe a sack strip and a fumble. So some of it is caused, but a lot of it is the ball bounces your way, okay? Or you just get lucky. Like, for instance, as we talked about in the last pod, Darnold throws the ball to two Dolphins players, including one who runs to the end zone for the Dolphins' only touchdown in the game. Okay, like, to me, that Baker interception, largely luck. Okay, he's in the right place, but it was thrown right to him. So I guess the totality of this, as we try to put a capper on the Dolphins' season to a degree, there still is a way they can make the playoffs, is that they are, no matter who is playing, no matter who is quarterbacking, they are a horrible road team. They're just a horrible road team. And today was the same. And we can talk about them getting back in the game with the Ballage run. This is now, Chris, the fourth time this season that they did not gain 200 yards. Do you want to guess how many times that happened during Joe Philbin's 3.5 years?
You said it happened how many times this year?
Four times they've been under 200 yards.
Oh, my God. In Joe Philbin's entire tenure, which was
three and a half seasons.
Yeah. Who was the intern for Joe Philbin? I don't remember.
Todd Bowles. It was actually a little longer than three.
Wow,
and a half.
I do not remember the Todd Bowles era whatsoever. I'm going to say in 3.5 seasons, let's call it six times.
Three times total.
Wow. Oh my God.
Same quarterback.
Yeah.
same quarterback
with a lot less experience. Well, I mean, now again, I guess with this season, how many of the less than 200 were Osweiler games?
I think it was one. Let me check. Okay, I'm gonna check. All right, so basically this season, it was. Let's take a look.
It
was the three division games until this one. So it was the Pats game. He played in the Pats game that was up there.
Yep.
The Jets game here, that I believe was Osweiler, correct?
And then the Bills game here, which Tannehill played.
So three of the four Tannehill has played.
Okay, yeah.
And they've been under 200 yards in all of those games.
And today they had a 75-yard rushing touchdown.
Almost half of their yardage. Nearly half. Is it almost or nearly? I never know. Simon's much better with language than me. I should ask him. Almost or nearly, half of their yardage today was one run by their third string back.
Now, I will say,
Our
sacks are included in the total yards total, right? Yeah, so nine sacks for 71 yards. So, in theory, they gained like 260 yards, but then lost back 71 of them on sacks. But yeah, like 75 yards of their 193 total coming on one rushing play is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. And to me, the symbol of this team and the problem with Ryan Tannehill and why you're over it and I'm over it, even though I was trying to pump it up with a Ryan Tannehill never dies column for Dolphin Maven before today's game, just to try to get people's hopes up again.
Because in the next game, he's going to throw for 350 yards and three touchdowns, and the Dolphins are going to go into week 17 just needing some tiebreakers to go their way to get into the playoffs.
In the hunt, perpetually in the hunt. Always in the hunt. And then they lose to Buffalo. They get shut out in Buffalo. Right. But yeah, look, which again has happened before. But the point I was making on Tannehill was this. There was this big thing about him being sixth in the league in passer rating, right? And so, Pro Pro Football Focus dug into those numbers a little bit, and they called it totally fraudulent. And they, as we've talked about, they go through every play. And one of the things that they cited was the interceptions that should have been, that he had something like, I think it was six balls that should have been picked, which was tied for the most with Roethlisberger. When Roethlisberger's thrown, like, basically, you know, more than twice as many passes as him.
And he, by the way, like, if you're kind of looking at today, today could have been another one, because he threw the hopeful ball to Parker that was swatted away. Like, you could make an argument that's an interceptable throw.
That is the best that Devontae Parker has ever competed for a ball.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean,
as a means of defending, almost. He became a defender more than someone who's trying to catch the ball.
I feel like he's never open. He's always blanketed, and a lot of times he doesn't fight.
Watch coaches' film to see how often these receivers are open, because it seemed the whole day as Ryan Tannehill kept turning into sacks. Like, he looked like Brock Osweiler today. Let's be honest. That it seemed like he was always there was never any receivers open, and that he had to take these sacks. Like, I need to watch the coaches' tape to see how often were there receivers open that he just, like, it felt like he was giving up on plays as quickly as he could, rather than trying to stick it out in the pocket or roll out to his right or whatever and trying to throw the ball downfield. That he was just willing, he was a willing acceptor of sacks today.
Here are his numbers, and I'm going to get back to the passer rating conversation here. I want to talk more about the sacks, because on who to blame.
I'm growing ever more annoyed by the quarterback rating stat, because, like, I watch football. Ryan Tannehill is not a quarterback rating of 100 quarterback. Like,
no.
even with the interceptable throws, even with the concept of those two plays in the Raider game being, you know, accounting for a disproportionate amount of that quarterback rating, like, we can watch the games and see that Ryan Tannehill, every damn time they have to win one of these road games, earlier this year, the Pats game was a similar game. Mm-hmm. Look, the defense let that game get away too. It's not only on Ryan Tannehill. The offense was appalling in that game. He was appalling in that game. You have a chance to take a 3-game lead on the road against New England. At least hold up your end of the bargain. Dude, like, I understood Minnesota today had 200 offensive yards in the first quarter. Okay, the defense didn't hold up their end. You didn't either. Like, Ryan Tannehill, again and again, has been placed in these situations. We talked about today on the DM string, what was it, 2013 or whenever, under Joe Philbin. When they had a chance to win two games in the final season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about the Bills game the next week against the Jets. If they win that game, they get into the postseason.
It loses to Geno Smith in
right,
the next
game. Right, like... How many times do we need to see Ryan Tannehill have this game before we stop talking about his freaking quarterback rating and start talking about what we're seeing? Like, and I don't like being that guy. I hate being eye test guy, because I've always been someone who likes looking at numbers. But for the love of God, can we stop looking at quarterback rating as a judge of this player? Like, Adam Gase is very good at engineering that number. When we talked about turnover margin earlier, that's what Adam Gase is good at. He doesn't want his quarterback to throw interceptions and, in most cases, take sacks, unlike today. They're trying to prevent negative plays rather than create positive ones. That is their number one goal with their offense. And yet, Ryan Tannehill, again and again, has shown he does not make enough big plays, and that you can get a lot of quarterbacks in Adam Gase's system to not turn the ball over, even though, as we're saying, he's probably come close a few times to turning the ball over. So I am fed up with the quarterback rating conversation. Like, why are we so wed to a lazy stat that's based off of an outdated formula of how we judge football? Like, I don't understand how, in this advanced era of analyzing sports, how we nitpick everything, and there's 1,000 guys on Twitter that review film, why we're wed to quarterback rating, of all things. Today's edition of the 5 Reasons Podcast is brought to you by AutoNation. Thinking of selling your car? AutoNation's expert appraisers will give you a top dollar offer and a check the same day. The offer is guaranteed for 7 days or 500 miles at any of our locations. And they will buy your car even if you don't buy one from them. AutoNation is proud to support the efforts of local organizations and treatment facilities in the fight against breast cancer. Since starting the Drive Pink campaign, AutoNation has raised and donated over $15 million to fund life-saving cancer research. Show your support in the fight against breast cancer by using the hashtag DrivePink and showing off your pink AutoNation license plate frame. Visit AutoNation.com to find the nearest location to you.
There's a lot to dive into there. Part of this, no, I appreciate you doing that, because I feel the same way on this one. And here's the thing about the quarterback rating. First, PFF broke it down and basically said it was somewhat fraudulent. The other part of it that was fraudulent is that the sample size for Tannehill was roughly half of the other quarterbacks on the list. He threw for half as many passes as something like 30 of the other top 32 quarterbacks in quarterback rating, because basically he and Osweiler split the snaps this year. Not basically, they have. And so it's just not enough of a sample size. There was less than 200 passes that he's thrown, whereas Drew Brees has thrown like 500 passes. So it's not even if you like the stat, which I don't, because it counts a couple things twice. I think what it really counted for him was this high touchdown percentage, which had gone up quite a bit, and his yards per attempt, which is a stat that I do look at. But the completion percentage to me is garbage. I mean, completion, anybody can complete 67% of the passes these days, especially when running. Well, except Josh Allen, but Josh Allen isn't, they're not running an offense where basically half of their passes are 6 yard flats. Okay. So, and one of the things I mentioned about Tannehill today as we're watching the game, there's never any intermediate stuff. It's all like he'll take a shot and then it's short, and he'll take a shot and then it's short. There was a back shoulder throw today that Kirk Cousins made that I never see Tannehill make. It's just that little 18 yard dig the sideline. Like that back shoulder throw, like I just don't see that throw from him. And you talk about eye test. I talk about fear test. Okay. That's how I judge quarterbacks. And I'm like you, someone who relies a lot on numbers, right? Like that's part of what Simon's angry at me right now, because I'm looking at all the Dolphins numbers and every ranking they have in every category is high 20s. Everything, like across the board, except their kicking game, it's all high 20s. And he's like, well, look at the fact that we have all these injuries and we're 7-7. Okay. But I do rely on stats quite a bit. But with quarterbacks, you can't rely on that stat, okay? Here's how I judge quarterbacks.
Or you can't really rely on any one stat. You have to put it all together. Like, I'm not totally wed to Pro Football Focus's grades. I'm not totally wed to quarterback rating. I'm not totally wed to ESPN's formula that they came up with a couple of years ago. Like, I'm not wed to any one of these things. Like, it all should be taken in totality, because there are different ways of viewing the position, and I think taking all of them is far more productive than being wed to one of them.
I'm looking at fear test. Like I said, eye test, fear test. Eye test, I can tell if a quarterback can sense pressure or not. He cannot. Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes today, you know, he had no chance. Okay. Interior of the line fell apart on them. They have not addressed that properly. Okay.
Or they blitz more than they had in protection.
Right. Well, there were a couple times. There was one time Bellage couldn't even turn his head. I mean, there was no chance.
There was one today that Bob Greasy shouted out in the broadcast, and Bob Greasy, I thought, had his best broadcast game of the season. He had multiple observations. I was like, wow, that's really interesting. One that Anthony Barr, the Vikings linebacker, had Ryan Tannehill's cadence nailed down and used that cadence to get to Tannehill before Bellage could block him, because he had it read so well. And that is alarming. Like those are kind of the details of the game. Again, football is a game of details, and I would say our 3 yards per carry guys are better than almost anyone that I know analyzing the Dolphins at analyzing those details. And that for me was alarming, that a Vikings linebacker, not even someone who plays the Dolphins twice a year like someone on the Jets might, but someone who sees the Dolphins once every 4 years, would have Tannehill's cadence nailed down. That was alarming to me.
Wasn't that an issue with Philbin too?
That was even more alarming, which was he said, ready, go, that was a pass play, and go was a run play. And like, I still remember that, because I still cannot freaking believe that an NFL team had a cadence that I understood on my couch. An NFL team, how does that happen?
And that guy is now coaching the Green Bay Packers and did not have as many sub 200 yard games over the course of his entire tenure as Adam Gase has had in the past 14 weeks. Not even 14 weeks. It's like 8 weeks. Okay. That we've had four of these games. Okay. Well, maybe 10 weeks going back to the Patriot game, but I'm going to get back to fear test. And part of this is what you're touching on with Tannehill. I never feel like he's dictating to the opponent. Mm-hmm. I always feel like he's a sitting duck for the opponent. And then we start to make excuses. They don't have an offensive line. The receivers are not getting open. They know his cadence. Why watch other quarterbacks? And this is, again, eye test. And I'm watching even Patrick Mahomes, or I'm watching, you know, Roethlisberger today. Okay, they didn't put up a ton of points. Okay, but even Brady at the end, who made one of the dumbest throws he's ever made over the course of his career, that throw in the fourth quarter today. But I feel like they're dictating. Like, they're in control. Yeah. They're controlling pace of game. They're controlling, you know, what the defense does and moving the defensive pieces around. I never feel that way with Tannehill. I feel like he's just sort of like we used to call Chad Henne the robot. In fact, I believe it was Chris Joseph, the host of the Ballscast, who actually penned that phrase on the old Finns Nation site, okay, as the robot. I'll have to ask Chris if he did. But like, I always feel like he's being dictated to. And so to me, that's an eye test thing. But then I get to the fear test. And the fear test is this. When Tom Brady got the ball today at the end against Pittsburgh, yep. He had played poorly, right? He had played,
yeah, he played
poorly.
He played a really bad game, 10 points. And yet right. He has the ball 4th and 15. And I'm like, I'm watching the Steelers drop into their 7-man zone at the first down marker. I'm like, Brady's going to find a space in this. He's going to find a space in this. And they're going to score and they're going to tie the game. Or they might even go for two and try and win the game in regulation. Like, you felt that. Absolutely.
Right. And so, do you ever feel that way with Ryan Tannehill?
No.
Do opponents ever feel that? If you are part of the Minnesota fan base today, okay, and the Dolphins cut that thing to 21-17. And here's the one point I wanted to make. The one play that symbolized the whole Tannehill era to me, and it's why I'm out on it, okay? And if they're going to bring him back for 18-5, they better get competition. Please, God, get competition, which they probably won't again, okay? But it was that play at the end of the first half. They're driving in. They've got a chance for a touchdown. I don't think it was 21-17 yet. I think it was
21-7 at that point.
21-7. They were going for the touchdown.
Possession.
Right. And he had Kenyon Drake, okay, is... I mean, the hero of last week, which we've all forgotten. Anybody got any Miami Miracle Shock at the Rock merchandise we can sell right now? Okay, Kenyon Drake. There is no one within 8 yards of him. Okay, I know his coach doesn't like him very much. Okay, but he seems to be somebody who can do something with the ball when there's no one within 8 yards of him. He's out there in the right flat, totally uncovered. Tannehill appears, and I'm going to have to watch it again. He appears to see him. He appears to see him because he kind of flashed to the right a little bit and then forced the ball into double coverage in the end zone. I think it was the second down play. I don't even know who the intended receiver was. I can't remember. But Drake was...
Was it the one that Amendola dropped in the end that they ruled a catch at the one, or was it the one before that?
It was not the Amendola play. Okay, that wasn't Tannehill's fault. That was not the Amendola's play. I'll have to look at the play-by-play. We'll get it before the end of this podcast. But he forces a ball to the center of the field in double coverage. He's got Drake wide open, and it just looked like he wasn't comfortable enough. And this was before, you know, the Vikings had like an all-out assault on him. Okay, so the happy
this was the one where he threw it to Nick O'Leary and nearly had him decapitated.
Exactly. Okay, in double coverage, and he has a better receiver, a more dynamic receiver, out in the flat on the right, and appears to see him, but happy feet. Moves back to the center and throws into double coverage. And I'm just looking at and here's how that could have changed. If you get a touchdown there, and Drake walks into the end zone, okay? I mean, he did something much more dynamic last week, okay? This would have been easy. If you get that, you're 21-14. Now, I'm not typically one of those, well, then, and this happened, and this, because obviously, whenever things happen in the game, it affects what happens next, okay? So I don't know. All right, the Kalen Ballage runs for 75 yards. But if he did, you're tied, okay, to start the third quarter. And it just, I just feel like you're always this far away. Like, if he just had better instincts for the position, and that's an instinct play. Like, that's a play, that's not just a play that Brady or Rodgers makes, okay, or Breeze, or, you know, Luck, or, I mean, how deep do we, or Roethlisberger, or Mahomes, or
Jared
Goff. Or, okay, I mean, down the list? I'll tell you what, we're going to get further than 6, and that's where Tannehill was at passer rating today. How many guys make that play? I would say 18 to 20 quarterbacks make that play. He's just not one of them. And so we've done a lot of Gase bashing here. I've done a lot of Gase bashing here, and not so much you. But again, this today was another example of a lot of things broke wrong. Yes, they had a lot of guys hurt. Yes, they're playing guys who should be on the street in the center of their offensive line.
And but defensive the quarter line.
And defense. And the center of the defensive line. They're paying a lot for their ends, okay? Right. But and their ends are healthy. But I'm just at the point now where it's just like, he never elevates them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He never makes more of the circumstances than there could.
And,
it's
and,
always
and doesn't take their chances.
Give you a good passer rating, right?
It doesn't take their chances because in that third quarter, after Kalen Ballage scores such that I make it a 4-point game, the Dolphins have three possessions where the game is still a 1-score game. The first one was 5 plays, 4 yards punt, and that was they get a first down in 2 plays, and then Ryan Tannehill sacked for 9 yards. Ryan Tannehill sacked for 8 yards. 3rd and 27, punt on 3rd down. And then the next one was run for -3 yards, incomplete. And the next one was run for 2 yards. There's a play mix in there that shouldn't be there. Incomplete, sack. And it's just like that's the Tannehill era is it's what? 11 plays, -9 yards, 3 punts. And then the next time you touch the ball, you're down by 2 scores, and then the game snowballs from there. Those are the opportunities that other teams take when you claw it back to a 1-score game. We can throw out what happened in the first half, and it was a calamity, but you're down 4, and then you're down 7, and like, not even any movement of the ball. And again, we have talked about the offensive line. I mean, how everything has changed. Everything has changed around Ryan Tannehill. Is there one player that has been a through line of the entire Ryan Tannehill era? Not on the offensive side of the ball. That's been there all what?
No,
would Stills, it be 7 years?
Stills would be the longest tenured at this point. But
every supporting cast player has changed.
Jawan James, maybe, right? Is he the longest tenured?
Yeah, because I think he would have been drafted the next year, I think.
Right.
But, okay, no, actually, he was drafted 2 years after Tannehill. So, again, whatever. They changed out the whole line. They changed out the whole receiving corps. They changed out the whole backfield. They changed out the coaching staff. At a certain point, you have 3 possessions on the road. Do something with them. Like, do something so that you can bring your team back into the game, because Ryan Tannehill did not bring his back into the... Like, when they were coming back, it was a pick six and a 75-yard run. Didn't even do anything on those possessions. Like, he didn't... He contributed nothing to the effort today. He was part of a long drive that included some wildcat, like everything that Adam Gase had in the playbook. He threw out in that one drive at the end of the first half to try and move the team downfield. And Ryan Tannehill barely even contributed to that. Like, Tannehill contributed nothing today. And look, he's playing hurt. His ankle is probably in immense pain, but he was out there.
His shoulder's not fine,
but if you're out there, like, I get to judge you if you're out there. And Ryan Tannehill, again and again, has had these opportunities, both home and away, to prove himself as a quarterback that lifts, a quarterback that's not totally dependent on supporting cast, a quarterback that you don't need to hold his hand towards winning the Super Bowl with immensely talented rosters. Like, he's just not that guy. And like you said, I think they will bring him back. I'm not sure there's a better option, although I do think that the Derek Carr option is becoming increasingly attractive. I think he's played well of late. But, man, like, they're just... How many times do we have to see this game before we say it's good, but it's not good enough? Like, and that's the story. I mean, frankly, the Vikings fans feel that about their quarterback after what's happened in the last few weeks. And I thought Kirk Cousins was fine today, but like a lot of teams feel that about their quarterback. And I think all of them should be opting for, I'm not going to pay him the $18 million or the $20 million or the $25 million or the $84 million guaranteed that the Vikings are. I'm not okay with this. I'm not okay with living Groundhog Day, Ryan Tannehill, age 31, next year when the Dolphins are going to be 6-5 going into an away game that they have to win in order to get a tie-breaking situation, and they're going to lose because it's been the whole damn tenure. Like, it's 7 years now. We have enough sample size. We don't need to ask, is Ryan Tannehill good enough? He's not. He's not good enough. Question answered. It's been answered already. And like, I don't need to see another year. I don't need to see another big game like today and the Patriots game. And how many road games have we seen that he had his opportunity to prove it? It's been proven. It's over. And look, and the thing that I'm most bothered by from a personal point of view is that I have been a bit of a prisoner to the last result, right? After the Colts game, I said I'm out. I said I was out. After the Pats game, I said he's probably coming back, and I think he probably should come back. And now today, I'm saying it's over again. I don't like being a prisoner of the moment. It's why I frankly hate this Heat team, because the Heat team goes from, you know, losing dreadful home games to winning 4 out of 6 on a West West Coast road trip that I thought would break them. Like, I don't like difficulty of figuring out. I'm like, I don't care if they win the next game and then lose the following game. I'm done. I'm out. It's over.
I want to tell you about another great sponsor of the Five Reasons Sports Network. And for this one about PC Reboot, I'm going to speak to personal experience because I started going to Barrington about 6 months ago because I'm terrible with computers. I get extremely frustrated with them and all of my different devices. I was looking for somebody. I just happened to stumble upon his great reviews online. So I went to check him out over in Pembroke Pines. He's over in East Pines on 8970 Taft Street, and I had a great experience. And so I've been going back ever since. And the reason I had a great experience is not only does he know what he's doing, he's got over 20 years of experience fixing computers. He's a Microsoft certified technician, but he also fixes all types of other products. But he's honest. He told me what the problem was. He told me what it should really cost. And then again, this week, I had another issue because my battery is not working very well on my Dell computer. So I brought it to him. Any other technician basically would have taken the money out of my pocket, double charged me. And he's like, have you checked to see if this thing's under warranty? And I'm like, no, I haven't. And so I went back, checked if the thing's under warranty. And now I'm getting a free battery sent to me. And that's because, again, he's honest. He's only going to fix what he thinks he needs to fix and nothing more. And he's going to charge you the right price for it. He does smartphone and tablet repair. He does game console repair. He does smart home and surveillance camera installation, website design, all of that stuff. So check out his website. Here's what it is. It's ipcreboot.com. That's ipcreboot.com. Again, 8970 Taft Street in Pines. Phone number is 954-442-1002. And when you call Barrington, talk a little Miami sports with him. He's a big Miami sports fan. And with that, back to Ryan Tannehill. Can I tell you again why passer rating is fraudulent when it comes to him?
Yes, please do. I'm here for any and all passer rating is fraudulent related content.
Okay, so his passer rating today was 59, which is atrocious, but it should be worse because if you look at his numbers, he was 11 of 24 for 108, okay? But passer rating does not account for sacks, which is something that I've never understood. So he was sacked 9 times for 71 yards.
You can essentially say that it's not his fault, right? It's not his fault that he's being sacked in theory.
Well, yeah, except he doesn't sense pressure. But okay, but he was sacked 9 times for 71 yards. So his net yardage today, and in college, this is how he would be evaluated, by the way, okay? Because in college, it counts.
Well, no, so, I think in college, they counted as rushing stats.
As rushing stats.
So he would have had negative 70. He would have had, so he had 1 carry for positive 1 yard. So he would have had 10 carries for negative 70 yards today.
Sounds about right. Oh but his net production today, if you add his rushing yard to his 108 passing yards and subtract his 71 sack yards, was 38 yards.
Oh my God. For an NFL quarterback. Oh my God.
He played an entire game and he netted 38 yards.
His long completion was Amendola for 18.
For 18.
Oh my God. Like it's just how many completions do receivers?
Well,
five catches by outside receivers.
Kenny Stills had 1 catch and 3 targets for 17. Yeah. Butler, that confuses me because he's wearing Landry's old number. he had 1 catch for 3 in 3 targets. He had Devontae 0-for-1. So he threw today. He threw with the exception of Amendola. Even if you want to include him, but with the exception of Amendola, he was 2-for-7. Throwing for receivers for 29 yards. If you want to include Amendola, he was 5 of 15 for 59 yards throwing to outside receivers today.
Shocking! It's shocking. And I mean, yes.
Well, it's not shocking though.
It's shocking in the way that Simon Clancy would use shocking, which is like awful. But they got Trey Waynes back today. He was back from concussion, and you know that's a little bit extra. But I mean, Minnesota has not been a defense all year that has shut teams down. Like, teams have scored in the 30s against Minnesota this year. On paper, they're, I think, probably the Dolphins' best opponent this year in terms of roster talent. But still, like, they're not that overwhelming. They're just not. Like, if the Dolphins played them here, I don't think that's what it would... I really don't think that's what it would have looked like. I think this is a venue thing, and we can tackle the reasons why venue things happen. I'm frankly not that well-versed. You, having talked to athletes for a lot longer than I have, can maybe come up with some better theories. All I know is I mean, the passing splits this year. So I'm gonna give you the passing splits this year, courtesy of ESPN.com. This includes Brock Osweiler. So I can try and find Tannehill specifically. But so home completion percentage 68.5%, away 62.3%. Yards per attempt at home 8.9 yards per attempt, away 6.4 yards per attempt. Touchdowns, 17 touchdowns at home, do 7 touchdowns away. Interceptions are the same at 5-5. Sacks are actually the same. In terms of quarterback rating, the Dolphins combined quarterback rating at home is 115, and the Dolphins combined quarterback rating away is 82. And that 82 is flattering. I don't know when that 82 happened, but so it's a huge difference. Do you have any theories as to why?
You know, I've always questioned this when I've talked to athletes, and you know, they'll give you this standard cliches, you know, comfortable sleeping in your own bed.
Yeah, sleeping in your own bed is the one that gets thrown around the most.
Right, and then it's also, you know, which I don't buy that one at all. I'll give you my explanation for that in a second, but it's also you know, just field conditions. You know, and then you know, crowd gets brought up. The reason I don't buy the sleeping in your own bed thing is because I actually think there are less distractions on the road. Remember, NFL players have a curfew. NBA players do not. Okay. So NFL, I mean, I would see guys in the NBA out, you know, I hate to say it, I was out two, three in the morning. Okay.
Well, I mean, you have to work the next day, but in a far different capacity.
Well, I do, but I had to be up for shoot around. I mean, and you know, and then, you know, when you're coming out off of Bourbon Street and you're with Chandel Richardson and Joe Goodman during the Big Three era, and Spo looks at you and is like, "Where the fuck were you guys last night?" That's a pretty good place to start. But but in the NBA, it's just part of the culture. Like you're out late. And, you know, that was the whole thing with Iverson down here, was that, you know, I mean, he had South Beach flu, like he never showed up at a shoot around ever. But that's just part of it. The whole purpose of shoot arounds in the NBA, you realize, is to make sure players are not out too
late. It's like taking attendance.
Right. That's it. Okay. I mean, there's a current Heat player who used to play for another team who was the most drunk I've ever seen a player at a shoot around. Okay. I talked to him. He was not on the Heat at the time. And I mean, he was lit, okay, at 11 in the morning, okay, like totally plastered. If you guys think about it, you'll probably figure it out, okay, the audience. But maybe we should make a contest of that. I got Texas Roadhouse gift certificates to give away. But yeah, he was totally obliterated. Okay, in the NFL, there is a curfew. They're all staying.
What did Deion Waiters have to say that day?
Anyway, so let's. Tell me to go the fuck away. Anyway, okay, but NFL players, like, it's much more regimented. Yeah. It is. And you would think it wasn't because you've got 53 guys plus staff. But even the fish tank stories when, you know, they have those guys on, even like Mark Duper, okay, who was notorious, okay, for living it up. And he talks about it on the Fish Tank podcast, him and Clayton. Like, didn't happen in road games, okay? It didn't happen on road games, okay? It happened more at home, okay? He talked a lot about the bars and the clubs that they went to back here. On the road, like, there is a strict curfew. There are meetings scheduled all night long, okay? They don't take chances with that stuff. You never hear – do you ever hear about NFL players getting in trouble on the road, ever?
No.
Ever. Do you ever hear about NFL?
I guess there was a story of Barrett Robbins before the Super Bowl.
Well, right, yeah, but that was a unique situation. Yeah. He took off for Tijuana. He was bipolar. I mean, that was a unique deal. But like, for the most part, you don't hear about that. Now, in the NBA, you don't as much, but what you do hear about a lot, okay, is so-and-so is hosting a party this night in Atlanta, okay, yeah. Right? And sometimes the clubs make that up. Like, they used to do that with Shaq all the time. Mm-hmm. Where like Shaq was hosting parties the whole year there, even though he was playing for the Heat around the country. There was this one club in Atlanta that always put that on the radio on every urban station would have like Shaq host. If you flip to it, like have Shaq hosting a party, and Shaq's like, I wasn't even there. Like, I don't even know what they're doing.
probably could sue. I have heard though, by the way, that Jalen Rose has sort of passed a theory, which is anytime you see an athlete tweet, "What's up, Toronto?" That really what he's saying is, tell me where I need to party and tell me where tell me where to meet.
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely. And NBA players, like I said, the Big Three Heat, like, I mean, I have stories for days. OK, I have stories for days. OK, about, you know, the way that they handled themselves on the road. But they also had a lot of family guys there who were kind of professional and they sort of, and they didn't make it as public, I guess, as some of the teams that have a lot of younger players, but it's totally different in the NFL. So the whole thing about, you know, I heard some people like Zach Duarte, who's in our network on the Chamber podcast. It was just like, I mean, if you guys think I'm bad, okay. Like, I mean, listen to Zach sometime after a Dolphins loss. Like, it was just, I mean, he not only did he want to fire everybody, like, he just wanted to burn down the Davey building. Okay. Move them to Miami Gardens early. He's just going off on them. And he's got a caller called in. Like, well, I'm sure, you know, there's always that caller. It's always the guy, you know, it is early 60s, okay, hates the current NFL player but watches it anyway. And it's like, oh, I bet you they were out partying last night in Minneapolis. Because really, they're waiting to get out of Miami so that they can party in Minneapolis, okay? Yeah, like, they got to go to St. Paul.
Right, so they can go through all the tunnels, all the buildings that are interconnected, so I never have to walk outside. That's a real party.
You can get to the mall. Yeah, you can get to the mall. You get straight to a Macy's from the Marriott, actually. And the Heat players used to stay across from the Target Center, and they would take a bus, okay, in like minus 10 weather instead of just walking through the tunnels. So, like, they would take this bus around the block. Anyway, okay, so, yeah, they want to party in Minneapolis, okay? That's what they want to go do. So this guy, oh, yeah, they were probably partying in Minneapolis. They don't care. No, they weren't, okay? They were in bed by 11 o'clock, all right? So this doesn't have anything to do with that. I think, honestly, it's certain teams are mentally strong in these situations and certain teams are not. And what we have seen is that this team in those situations has cracked. And a lot of times it's been the quarterback. So in New England, they all cracked this year. In Cincinnati, Tannehill cracked. And some of that might have had to do with the shoulder situation, because as we look back at it now, you know, that was a game where it got hurt, right? So some of it had to do with that. And today, he cracked. The interior of the offensive line completely cracked. We haven't talked about the defense very much today.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, this is why Bobby McCain's a number two corner or a slot corner and not a lead corner. So did they miss Xavien Howard? Yes, absolutely. I didn't think I'll be curious to see what Pro Football Focus says. I didn't think Rashad Jones played one of his better games today. They again did not get a ton of pass rush. I know, who's it? Malvo had his first sack, right? And, you know, Wake was in there, but other than that, they really didn't pressure Cousins. Dalvin Cook had probably his best game of the year. Okay,
yeah.
I mean, they let him get off. He was untouched on two of the long runs.
That for a lot of running backs this year. A lot of running backs have had their best game of the year against Miami.
And the run defense is their best number, by the way. The run defense of all their rankings is their best number,
because they've had a few good games. But like every week, we have Jamie Eisenberg on the pregame show, and every week is like, I like the matchup for the ex running back who's playing the Dolphins this week. I'm starting him in all my leagues, and I think they're gonna have a good game today, because that run defense is, when it's been bad, it's been give up your best game of the year bad, as it was today for Dalvin Cook.
This is the 5 Reasons Sports Network, Miami Sports on Demand. We now have 15 podcasts in the network covering every professional sports team in South Florida and much more, all absolutely free. Find all of our shows on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or Podbean. If you just can't get enough, become a member of our patron feed and you'll get even more exclusive content. Here's a sneak peek of what you'll hear on the upcoming episode of our newest show, The Chamber Podcast.
We're now joined by Dr. Peter Marciante. There's a local sports team down here hampered by injuries right now. If a team is ravaged by injuries, how much do you put of that into the training staff and the physical therapist?
Unfortunately, I put a lot on it. Now what they've done is they've blocked out all external doctors to have total control, and I'm not sure it's working that well. But there needs to be a little bit more freedom, and guys need to be also take charge in their own healthcare. They can't just go to a team who's trying to manage 100 players.
If you're interested in advertising your business on any of our podcasts, reach out to us at @5ReasonSports on Twitter. To stay up to date with all of our shows, enter 5 Reasons in your search bar and then hit subscribe.
I think what we're saying in general here is it's just not... I hate saying a team is not mentally tough, okay, because I'm not comparing us or any of anybody.
Because they play professional football for a living and requires a certain amount of toughness.
Right, so they're incredibly mentally tough, okay, so I'm not arguing that. But I'm saying relatively to other teams that go on the road and get wins, they're not, okay? And we have a 3-year sample size now under Adam Gase, and we haven't even talked about him that much today, all right? But like it's they're just not good on the road. They're not good on the road under him. And they've changed. Look, they changed things this year in terms of when they went out to the West Coast. They changed things like they've he's tried to, you know, alter schedules. I mean, but this goes back like even Philbin's teams. Remember when Philbin decided like during the week, like they were going to take Thursdays off instead of Tuesdays off, like that came out of nowhere. Like the whole NFL takes Tuesdays off. You want to take Thursdays off. Like, I feel like there's been, as you've said, player after player has changed. Gimmick after gimmick has been used. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they ran freaking Oklahoma drills. Okay. Under Dan Campbell. Like what is,
you know, what? It wasn't Todd Bowles that was the interim coach. Todd Bowles is the interim for Tony Sperano. It was Dan Campbell for Philbin.
You're right. Don't edit it out. I like being wrong on that. That's fine. Okay. Jets fans will correct me. So they ran Oklahoma drills under Dan Campbell. I mean, they've tried everything, and we're just going to keep coming back to this. They're just not good enough.
Yeah. Can we say this year they're not good? Can we say they're not good?
Well, they're not good. You and I are sitting here arguing about the Heat, and well, I'm sure we'll do a pod on this later this week. The Heat are better than them, like by a point differential basis. The Heat are better than them. There was a stat. Was it Duarte who put this one out? Because again, he's more negative than I am. But the stat that was put out about point differential today is just like remarkable. Mm-hmm. Hold on 1 second. I'm gonna get it because this
in
is
away
class.
Games or just generally?
Here it is. So the Dolphins are now 7-17 under Adam Gase on the road, including the playoffs. 14 of the 17 losses are by double digits.
Jeez,
they're not even in the games.
Well,
so,
I mean, I guess today they were in the game in the third quarter, and then it gets away from them in the fourth.
Like, right, but you and I both said when it happened.
Today they both got blown out. Then mm-hmm. had a really competitive, you know, streak in the game, and then blown out. They got blown out twice today. It was very bizarre where it was both a closed game and a double blowout.
Mm-hmm.
It was just bizarre. And like I said, they had three possessions after they made it a one score game to potentially either tie or take the lead in the game and took advantage of exactly none of them.
Well, you and I both said it when the game started to get away at the end, and I wanted to go play virtual reality again. when the game started to get away, we said, well, this is more representative of what the game has actually been.
Yeah.
So because if they had won this game, this would have been similar. What was it? Was it the Bills game or the Jets game where they were outgained like 2.5 to 1?
It was the Bills game. Yeah, I would more have compared it to last year. Actually, remember when they won in Atlanta after being 17-0 down? I remember it because it was the day of my brother's wedding, and I was like, I gave up on even following the game because it wasn't on the local TV station. It was like Jets Pats or something like that, and I gave up on even following the game, and I like kept getting notifications 17-3, 17-10, 17-13. Like, wait, hold on, this is close, and the Dolphins won the game. Like, hang on a second, the Dolphins won after being 17-0 down against the Super Bowl runners up last year, and it felt like this year you could have experienced that game in exactly the same way, which is, oh boy, they're 21-0 down after the first quarter, and next thing you know, it's 21-17, and they have the ball in the third quarter after forcing a Vikings 3-and-out, and then the offense just couldn't keep going with it because Ryan Tannehill, as we mentioned earlier, did nothing today.
All right. So where do we go from here? Because one of our guys in our network, Michael Sonbeek, who goes by Dutch, he tweeted out the playoff possibility, and I hate doing this because it's just such false hope. But
I know, because one of the things that we didn't get to is that today was an all around disaster. It wasn't just specifically a disaster within that game. Is that every other team that you're looking at in the schedule and saying, well, if they lose, then that gives us a chance. They gave you no help today. The Steelers, who had been riding a 3-game losing streak, they beat the Patriots. The Titans today shut out, did they end up shutting out the Giants? Yeah, they did 17-0.
Yes,
the Colts shut out the Cowboys, one of the hottest teams in football. And then the Ravens won again today. They're unbeaten under Lamar Jackson, and they beat Tampa today. So you got absolutely no help. Like, if the Dolphins had lost today, right, in exactly the same fashion, and three of those four teams had lost, I'd be like, okay, another bad road performance. In general, this is bad, but at least we can talk ourselves into the playoff scenarios. Like, today kind of erased all doubt and again proved that of this sort of middle-of-the-conference dross that you're in, you're the worst team, and probably by some distance, even though you beat Tennessee.
Right. Okay, but I'm going to throw the false hope out here anyway. So this is from, I believe this is originally from @CPO Tweet Stuff. and then retweeted by our at Dutch Beak. So this is where we are right now. So here's what needs to happen, because the other one you didn't mention is Pittsburgh beat New England, which
I did mention.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so fried at this point. All right. So here's what needs to happen. The Dolphins need to win out, which under normal circumstances you would say is very doable, mm-hmm. considering
they're
the two teams
that are
playing.
5-9 and 4-10. Yep.
Right. Okay. So they need to win out, and then here's what needs to happen. Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Baltimore need to go at least 1-1. So Tennessee has Washington and the Colts. Indy has the Giants and Tennessee. So what you would want there, because you're assuming Indianapolis is going to beat the Giants, you would think, mm-hmm. okay? So if you're assuming that, you want them to beat the Giants and lose to Tennessee. You want Tennessee to lose to Washington.
Oh, God.
Right, and beat the Colts, right? Okay. And then you need Baltimore to win one of their next two, at least, mm-hmm. okay? Now, one of them is against the Chargers.
Yeah, it's
and the other
Chargers.
The other is against the Browns. So it's very doable because, I mean, the Browns are playing pretty well right now.
And
but like
you're right, because if the Dolphins lose next week and the Browns win, then the Browns would be above the Dolphins in the standing. So let's not get too carried away about that one.
No, but something's got to break, right? Sure. So basically, that's what you need. You need a Tennessee.
So it's just saying they need a 4-team tie. They need everyone to be 9-7, and 4-team ties favor Miami.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Correct. Well, so that's what you need. So you have to root hard. For Indy to beat the Giants and Tennessee to beat Washington. The problem you have is if both Tennessee and Ryan Tannehill's the quarterback, Adam Gase is the coach. They have to go to Buffalo at the end of the season. I'm not doing this.
Don't bring. I was asked earlier this week. Earlier this year. I've been known to make a dork chart. Remember the year that we were on the air together, and there was like four teams that were tied on 48 wins to make the postseason, and like tiebreakers decided who finished third and who finished sixth, and I was breaking down all these tiebreakers. I felt like that was worth my effort. And like people, hey, you're gonna do that for the Dolphins? I'm like, I'll let you know when it's worth my effort. If the Dolphins had won today and everyone was 8-6 and two games decided, it might have been worth my effort. This is not worth neither your nor my effort to try and figure out exactly what combination of three team tiebreakers need to happen for the Dolphins to make the playoffs. It's not worth it.
Can we break down the Heat's possibilities for the sixth lottery selection or the sixth pick in, or the sixth slot in the Eastern Conference playoffs? Because it could be either.
Right. They're like a game and a half out of both.
Right. So you know what? We'll do that one instead. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more Dolphins, I'm sure, next week. I think both you and I are going to be at the Jaguars game. So we will get into that. But, again, we're sorry about the watch party. There's not going to be another one before the end of the year. Unless, I threw this out on Twitter, unless you want us to have one. Do you want the Heat and Dolphins to get higher draft picks? Because if you do, we're gonna have another watch party at your house.
Why my house?
No, I know their house.
At the watch party of the listener
who
wants
still listening
it. I see
to these Dolphins recap pods.
I suggested earlier an idea. I don't know what you thought of it, but February 25th, it's a Monday. The Heat are hosting Phoenix. Do we host a watch party just so that we can get a win?
But at that stage, is a win a loss? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. So the Heat's upcoming schedule. How about January the 2nd at Cleveland?
That's a good one.
Or actually, you know what?
Yeah.
December 28th, home Cleveland.
We can do that one.
Yeah. We should do that. We should have a watch party for a home Heat game, so just so we can get a win. Because definitely, one we can't do is December 23rd at Orlando. That's an L.
I can tell you right now,
that is an L.
Yeah, the Heat have no chance to beat the Magic. There's just, I mean, they can't do anything with Vucevic. So I don't know how this pod turned to that and Dion Waiters telling me to go away because he was wasted. I'm not sure, but that's where we ended up with this podcast. We're going to talk to Kevin Arnovitz this week, a little bit of NBA we'll do with him, and also our Josh Appel. We're going to get him out of the wrestling space because he does a lot of college football. We're going to talk some college football. So we will talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Five Ringer Podcast. Thank you so much.